Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Hour two coming at you from coast to coast. Michael Lombardi out there in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Hopeful to have VSiN's own and Circa's own Mike Palm with us later on this hour. We'll continue to talk Super Wild Card Weekend as well as the massive news over the last 24 hours. Nick Saban has retired, no longer the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide, and Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots are mutually parting ways after 24 seasons. So in a day, the greatest college coach and NFL coach in potential, likely ever that has been or will be done in the same 24 hours. And it's something I'm still having trouble wrapping my head around, Michael.
You know, it's funny, the Brown way, if you will, because when Nick came to Cleveland in 1991, the first hire that Bill Belichick made in the building for his coaching staff, Nick was in Houston with Jerry Glanville. They always had a great relationship. They talked different ideas. They're from different styles of play, if you will. But in the 4 years Nick spent with us in New England, he learned the Patriot way, which we now call it. It was the Brown way, because we didn't win any Super Bowls. It never got labeled that way. So everything that Nick learned there, he kind of embraced. But he always complained about it, right? So we always had a meeting after practice, all the coaches, and we would watch the practice tape. They still do it today in New England. And Nick would complain excessively about, I'm wasting my time, I got to get on to the next step of it, but all that. When he went to Michigan State, what do you think happened? They had that meeting. When he's at Alabama, they have that meeting. So it's kind of an iconic day that two institutions that run the same program from the grading system that we developed in Cleveland in 91, Nick still uses it today in Alabama. So these two programs that mirrored one another in terms of winning, in terms of philosophy, in terms of approach, both leave within 24 hours of one another. And it really kind of makes you think about all the stuff that Bill started in Cleveland that has gone on to change college and pro football forever.
That's why we're so lucky to have you as the namesake of this show, somebody that when you were working in pro personnel had experience in the same building with them at the same time, as well as your different relationships as time has gone on. But it feels like in my mind the same way as if, I don't know, as if Bear Bryant and Vince Lombardi both retired on the same day, right? Like, that's the way that we're going to talk about these guys for the rest of our lives. And I mentioned it earlier in hour one, like, for me personally, I don't know a football world that doesn't have these two in it. It's incredible to me that this news came down at the same time.
It is. And both of them, even though they're both the same age, they're both young. It's like Pete Carroll, very young, even though they have that number 7 next to their name. They're not your typical 70-year-old people. I mean, Belichick's capacity for work is remarkable. Same thing with Nick. I mean, I was told, and I think it's on the internet, that Nick was working up until yesterday. I know Bill was working yesterday. You know, I know he was working. Now, I'm not saying he was working on Patriot items, but he was working on football. And so they have this incredible, insatiable appetite for the work. They love the work. They don't cut a corner on the work. I'm sure when he's playing Middle Tennessee, it gets the same preparation as if he were playing Georgia. It's the same thing with Belichick. When they were going good, you know, on to the next game, on to the next game. If Belichick ever writes a book, it's going to be called Next, because that's all he ever cared about was the next thing. Even when you won, the next game's bigger than that game. You got that ingrained into your system because you were around him so much. So for me, you know, this is two guys who dominated football, college and pro, that walk away within 24 hours of one another. One, because they needed to have a mutual split, because I think the direction was changing in New England. The other, for whatever reason, he decided to leave.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting if we end up learning any more about Saban, because I think that was much more unexpected. Belichick, we've been talking about this for a while, especially the Tom Curran report when it came to the expectation was they were going to part ways after what had transpired in Germany and that loss to the Colts. But for Saban, 7 total national championships, 6 with Alabama, the other at LSU. At Alabama, 206-29, 10 SEC West titles, 11 of those 29 losses coming in Saban's first 4 seasons. His team's finished unbeaten twice, never lost more than 2 games in a season since 2008. The amount of times that they've been the number one team in the country is just surreal. The legacy that these two are both leaving, 6 Super Bowls, obviously, for Bill Belichick. But you don't have to be a fan of either one of these programs to respect what they have done, the legacy, the greatness, incredible, incredible things. And for Bill Belichick, it doesn't seem like things are done for him at all. Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft both spoke to the media earlier today. Kraft expected to answer some questions from media a little bit later. But Elliot, if we have it, let's take a listen to Robert Kraft and his parting words as they walked out of that earlier press conference this morning.
This is a move that we mutually agreed that is needed at this time. What Bill accomplished with us, in my opinion, will never be replicated. And the fact that it was done in the salary cap and free agency era makes it even more extraordinary. I thank Coach Bill for his hard work and dedication. It'll be difficult to see him in a cutoff hoodie on the sideline, but I will always wish him continued success, except when he's playing our beloved Patriots.
And you mentioned it earlier, Michael, this could be a generational offseason when it comes to the head coaching talent that is available in the National Football League this year. There are 7 coaching vacancies outside of New England. And another thing that you mentioned earlier, which I think is very interesting, is a team like potentially the Jacksonville Jaguars, or maybe there are some other teams that you want to give
Jets.
Suggestions for. Yeah, who could be reevaluating their current coaching situations.
You know, I hearken back to I'm a JFK fan, so he has a great quote. He says, the Chinese use 2 brushstrokes to write the word crisis. 1 brushstroke stands for danger, the other for opportunity. In a crisis, beware of danger, but recognize the opportunity. And this, to me, applies because there is great opportunity here. And it's not you can just hire Bill Belichick. It's the opportunity to hire Mike Vrabel. It's the opportunity to hire Jim Harbaugh. It's the opportunity to have someone who's a proven track record of being a head coach in a profession that has very few head coaches. We have play callers, we don't have head coaches. And if you're looking for that, I think this is a generational moment. I mean, Nick Saban probably doesn't want to coach anymore, but Pete Carroll does. You could hire him. Pete Carroll's still a good coach. Would you rather have Pete Carroll or Ben Johnson? You decide. So I think this is generational. And I think if you're the New York Jets and you're the Jets, you're sitting here telling me that Woody thinks Robert Saleh is a better coach than Mike Vrabel? You're telling me Robert Saleh's a better coach than Jim Harbaugh, 71% winning percentage versus a 33? I think we tend to look at there's no openings. Well, only the openings. But trust me, in buildings, if you understand football, you're sitting there saying, wait a minute, my guy might be better than this guy. That coach might be better. Now, and nobody would fault you for making the change. No one would. You know, when Leon Hess fired Pete Carroll after just 1 season and brought in Rich Kotite, everybody made fun of him for good reason. When Robert Kraft fired Pete Carroll, again, to bring in Bill Belichick, everybody criticized him. Ian O'Connor wrote a book on Belichick, but go right back and read the headlines of the New York Post article he wrote that day. Biggest mistake you could make. I mean, so I think this is a different landscape now. You fire Robert Saleh and you bring Mike Vrabel, and you think any Jet fan's going to complain?
No.
Now, maybe Aaron Rodgers would.
Yeah, maybe the new owner of the team would. But, like, that's dead on. And I think that makes the news yesterday even about what's going on with the Chicago Bears and Matt Eberflus, that they are deciding to keep him on board, makes that much more interesting when you know the head coaching candidates that are available out there. I'm glad that you brought up Pete Carroll, because despite him winning national championships, winning a Super Bowl, going to two, his situation in Seattle so overshadowed because of everything that happened over the last 24 hours with Nick Saban and Pete and Bill Belichick. But he spoke similarly about the way that he feels and him fighting to still be a coach. Take a listen.
I'm freaking jacked. I'm fired up. I'm not tired. I'm not worn down. You guys tried your best. You didn't wear me out. I'm, you know, it's the end of the season. I'm supposed to be, you know, go lay on a cot somewhere. I ain't feeling like that. And, you know, there's what's coming. I don't know. I got no idea. And I really don't care right now. But I do. I'm excited about it because there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to study. There's some great discoveries that are going to come our way. And as my all-time mentor Bud Grant said, not in so many words, there's rivers to wade, there's waves to catch, and there's mountains to hike.
Well, you know, he says he's excited for whatever's to come. As of right now, in the Seattle Seahawks statement yesterday, it says he's going to continue with the organization in an advisory role, but could he be an option as a head coach elsewhere?
Well, I think certainly that just you can listen to him talk. He feels like he could still do it. Now, he has a loyalty to Seattle. He built that program. You go through his one-loss record, you see the things that Pete's been able to accomplish in his coaching career. And, you know, we have a lot of people that, you know, make fun of him on, you know, because of game management and situational football. But, you know, when you win 58% of your games over 18 years, you know, if you're a gambler and you're betting NFL games and you're at a 58.6%, they're going to highlight you as a genius. But well, poor Pete Carroll, you know, he isn't. He's a 60% win percentage coach in Seattle in the 14 years.
Well, and trust me, as a Notre Dame and 49ers fan, I have loved to hate him for a long time in his time with USC and in the NFC West. Chewing that damn gum. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Robert Kraft, owner of the New England Patriots, answering questions from media right now about the future of the New England Patriots and them mutually parting ways with head coach Bill Belichick. So fortunate, Michael, to have somebody like you who obviously has a great friendship with Bill Belichick, have worked with him intimately. So you have a really, really good perspective on his frame of mind and what he might be looking for as he looks to take that next step moving away from New England. So as of right now, on DraftKings Sportsbook, the Atlanta Falcons are the favorite to land Bill Belichick. Of the vacancies that are currently available, or maybe some in the future that could become available depending on what happens here or there, where do you think might be the best landing spot for Bill?
Well, let's reverse it out, right? So a team that needs a stadium should be interested in Bill. Why do you say that? Well, he gives you credibility. He opens up a vast amount of doors. Jerry Jones hired Bill Parcells and got himself a stadium. And so if you want a stadium and you want an enthusiastic crowd behind him, you know, where you're going to sell season tickets and people believe there's credibility from the ownership, he's certainly your kind of guy. And I think if you look at what no one talks about is the ability of a coach to enhance the value of a franchise, okay? When Robert Kraft bought the Patriots and he paid, let's say, $185 million for them, they're worth probably $9 billion, maybe $8 billion today. Who had a lot to do with that? Certainly Kraft benefits from it. The players, certainly. Tom Brady, a lot. Bill Belichick, a lot. Nick Saban, when he went to Alabama, probably 90% of the enrollment at the University of Alabama came from the state of Alabama. Today, it's 50% comes from out of state, and the out-of-state tuition is like a private school fee. So the value of your franchise goes up. And if you have a franchise which is downtrodden, that appeals to you, right? So I think the best place for him to go to would be an owner that recognizes all that. and maybe needs a stadium to enhance that. Now, if I were Josh Harris and I need a stadium and I need credibility and I need a guy who grew up in Annapolis, Maryland, I might want to make a phone call to Bill Belichick. And I might want to stop having 90 people involved in the decision and just talk to him one-on-one. I think Arthur Blank's at 82 years old. He's been close. He was on the sideline when it was 28-3, and he watched his team lose it. I think he would be a perfect place. I think other places would be, it's all going to come down to the owner's ability to tell Belichick what he wants to hear in terms of that he can run his culture and he can run the football program. That doesn't mean he picks the players. That means he runs the football operation, that he's not reporting to the owner's son or some bean counter or any of that. It's a football building. We're going to run and do football. So I think Atlanta fits that portfolio. I think certainly the Chargers are desperate to fit that portfolio. They need to put people in their seats that aren't the opponent players, aren't the opponent team. That would help, right? The Raiders, that certainly would help. They need that. If you're not bringing Pierce back, nobody's going to argue that you hired Belichick, right? So I think there. And then again, there's the ones that I keep saying. I mean, you're the Jets. You're Jacksonville. You know, are you going to keep going down this road and say, okay, we're in good shape?
Is there a realistic world where the Jets don't stick with Robert Saleh in your mind?
No, there's no realistic world.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I bring that up. I don't think Bill would ever coach for the Jets, and I don't want to speak for him, but. You know, the way they're thinking, look, you can't think like the Jets are thinking because there's no logic to it. They're sitting there saying their offensive and defensive coaches are great. Everything's fine. We're running it all back. Now, if you believe that, I got some swampland to sell you in Jersey, too.
It's in a state of delusion, just like when we heard from Brandon Staley earlier this year that, you know, I'm going to keep doing my play calling duties because what we're doing is working. Really? Really? Are we watching the same game on the field? I'm not so sure. So when it comes to Belichick, the thing about Atlanta that I would have questions about is, does he want to walk into a similar situation that he kind of just had in New England where you have a decent defense, but you don't have the quarterback on the other side? Mm-hmm. I feel like the Chargers I know they have their cap issues, but you're walking in finally to having a good quarterback once again.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you want a quarterback, but most of the jobs that are open don't have a quarterback. You know, that's the problem. You know, it's like, what's the plan to get one? And I think that's something that the Patriots have to answer now. I think that's something that Titans have to answer. The Titans might be the worst job to go to right now.
Worse than Carolina?
Because I think, I think Tennessee thinks they have a quarterback. Oh. I mean, Carolina thinks they have one, too. I'm not sure they don't. I'm not sure they do. But I'm pretty sure Tennessee doesn't. So, like, if you go in there and the GM really believes, the owner believes in Levis, it's a tough road to hoe.
Sure. We are getting some quotes that are coming out of Robert Kraft's availability speaking with the media right now. He said when asked about potentially trading Bill Belichick, he said he didn't feel right to trade Bill or Tom Brady, that both had earned the right to do what they wanted to. And he also said, we've thought about that when asked about keeping Bill but relinquishing personnel duties, says that to take Belichick's power away would set up confusion. Quote, it wouldn't work in my opinion. Do you agree with that in New England? That because of all of the roles that he had?
I do, and I think people would have a hard time. I mean, you have to have some moxie to walk in and say, Bill, this is what we're doing. Like, you're gonna have to really know football to do that, because he's going to challenge you. Mm. Not in a threatening way, not in a humiliating way, but just in an intellectual way. How many people do you think could do that? It's like, how many people you think could look at David Tepper in the eye and said, David, what you're doing has got no chance to work. Everybody's going to tell him he's doing great. Like, part of the problem with the NFL is most people just say what they want to hear so they keep their jobs. It's about job survival. It's really not about being honest and being intellectually stimulating. It's about, I'm going to say whatever I have to say to keep my job. We see it all the time. So, yeah, I think that there's no way. Who are they going to bring in that Bill was going to sit there and say, okay, yeah, that's a great idea. I never thought of that. Because most of the ideas Bill has thought of.
Sure. I'm with you there. I am very curious as to what is going to happen as the Patriots go through this head coaching search process. It's the first time that they've had to do so in a quarter century. Bill's, of course, been there for 24 years, won 6 Super Bowls, been to 9. It's been an incredible road, an incredible journey, very difficult shoes to fill. Jerod Mayo has been the name that's been talked about for a long time, internal, obviously played for Bill Belichick, been on the staff since 2019. With Mike Vrabel becoming available, we've seen reports that there would be mutual interest there. When he came out earlier this season during the bye week, maybe that's what created or at least cemented some of the tension that was already going on in Tennessee. Who would you like? And I know it's still early and there's a lot to be figured out, but is there anybody that you would like to see in that role in New England?
Well, I think it's going to be somebody that understands the new structure and will work within the new structure. And I think it's going to be hard. Look, I think it's hard to follow Nick at Alabama. I think it's going to be even harder to follow Bill. Because here's what's going to happen. They're going to find out how many decisions Bill made in that building. You know, they're going to find out how much stuff that he had to do, how he handled things. And now they're going to change course. They can call it the Patriot way. They can certainly do that. And it started for 24 great years. But can they continue it? You know, is it really the Belichick way or is it the Patriot way? We're about to find out. We're going to find out by who they hire.
Well, it's funny, Michael, and this is obviously a very different situation, but just something that I experienced in my own life working at another network. When they let someone go, they had no idea what he had done. He was just a line item type of a thing. You make too much money, you're out, right? It took 8 people to redo what he was doing on a day-to-day basis by himself. So it's a remarkable, it's a completely different thing.
I always think back to the scene in Mad Men. Did you ever watch Mad Men?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so there's a scene where, you know, Don Draper and Roger, the older guy there, and they're all in the room and they know their company is going to get bought, and they bring the English guy in. And now they're going to try to make this company all 4 partners. And Roger doesn't want the English guy. And the older guy says to him, can you do what he does? And Roger says, no. Well, then he's with us. Like, they're going to find out who does what he does, right?
Exactly.
Like, that is what's going to happen. It's going to happen in Tennessee, too. Like, there's 15 things that Vrabel does that Rand Carthen doesn't know he did that were just handled that are going to be, now they're going to become problems.
Well, we said this yesterday, because Vrabel, such a hot commodity on the coaching carousel this offseason, like, it seems like if the Tennessee Titans bring in a new head coach, it's going to be a lateral move at best. Like, who are they genuinely going out and getting that's going to be a better option than Mike Vrabel? I do not know. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I don't think it is. I think
you just
to
talked
me,
about that being not an attractive landing spot for someone. Like,
right, because they're under a false illusion, right? They believe they're close. And when you're under that false illusion, it's not good. It's really just not good.
So much more to get to. It has been awesome delving into all of the psychology behind what's going on with all these coaching changes. We have Mike Palm coming up to join us for the final half hour of the program. VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino. Continue this conversation. Stay with us on VSiN and DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, come join us. You can become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. If you do, you'll get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. We know you love the picks. Got some good ones from VSiN's own Mike Somich earlier today, including he thinks the Green Bay Packers could potentially put the Cowboys on upset watch this week. But get all of his plays at VSiN.com/picks. There, all plays from hosts and guests on every single show. If you use our code for the Lombardi Line, you'll get 10% off an annual VSiN Pro subscription. That promo code, Lombardi. Welcome back into the Lombardi Line. Stormy Bonantoni and Michael Lombardi with you as we welcome in for the final half an hour of the program. VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas, Mike Palm. Mike, it's been a slow news day over the last 48 hours, huh?
What was the window between Carroll and Belichick? 18 hours? I mean, I said yesterday, if we could have got the Belichick news in the same calendar day, it would be a little bit like 50 years ago, the day the music died, right? I mean, Yeah. That's the day the coaches
went away. You got to have the coach people up on that. That was in that cornfield in Iowa, which I don't know if you've ever been, where Buddy Holly's glasses are, where you can see it, and the big bopper.
Richie Valens.
It's what, Cedar? Yep. Is it Cedar? It's Cedar something.
Cedar, Iowa, yes. Cedar Lake.
Cedar, Iowa. Yeah. Cedar Lake. And you know what's fascinating about that? Don McLean wrote American Pie over that because of that. And you can read the lyrics of American Pie and kind of attribute it to the events that happened when the music died. But they have a tour. The venue that they played in is still the same venue. And, they have it honored from there. And the only reason those poor guys died in that plane crash is because they were taking buses that had no heat in them. And so they wanted to actually take somewhere they could stay warm. And one of the guys had the flu. It's a fascinating story when you go through it, but you're right. Not a lot of people remember the day the music died.
Yesterday was the day, a few of you put it in this block, the day the coaches went away. I mean, is Pete Carroll a Hall of Fame coach, Michael?
I think he is. I have him in, based on my criteria, my book, he is.
Yeah.
Mike, let me ask you a question. You run a company, you're involved. If this is a generational moment to get this many great coaches available, let's take Nick Saban out of it. But you've got Vrabel, you've got Belichick. You've got Jim Harbaugh, 71% winning percentage in the NFL. Dan Quinn was not a slouch as a head coach. He went to a Super Bowl, right? And he's proven he's changed his tent. I mean, wouldn't you think, regardless of who you had or an opening or if you didn't have an opening, wouldn't you measure your coach against the availability of these?
Well, I keep thinking, are the Bears reevaluating Eberflus? I know that it seems like he's set in place, but the wheels have turned here. I mean, I think Harbaugh, Vrabel, Belichick in any single year would have their pick, but now owners sort of have to narrow down where do they want to go. I would ask you this question, Michael. I know if things were different, they wouldn't be the same, but how would you evaluate, what is it officially now, 7 openings in the NFL? How would you evaluate those 7 head coaching jobs? Where would you rank them?
8 if you include New England, right?
Okay. It starts with the owner, right?
Yep.
It starts with the owner. And you got to feel like the owner's going to let you build your program. You got to feel like the owner's going to allow you to institute a plan, you know. And here's the issue, right? You know, you could say, the owner could say all the right things to you, but if after a year and a half, he's bored with it or the players are complaining, he could fire you. And so that becomes a real issue too, right? So I think a lot of this, everybody thinks it's dependent upon the quarterback. I say no, because most places don't have quarterbacks, right? When Andy Reid went to Kansas City, he didn't have a quarterback. He didn't have a quarterback. He traded for Alex Smith, and then he drafts Mahomes. So, like, that's too short-sighted. It's the owner. The reason Andy Reid went to Kansas City is because Lamar Hunt's son, Clark, got so tired of everything else, he decided, I need to hire a CEO head coach. He did. He got rid of Pioli. He got rid of everybody else, and he hired him. So I think, to me, that's the key is when you evaluate these jobs, you got to evaluate the owner. Like, to me, Tennessee's way down the list because they're not realistic about their team. They're complaining about Vrabel over the last 2 years. Well, Vrabel's teams have been horrible. John Robinson, the general manager, there's more first-round picks that don't even make it to the field. Like, he was doing wonders with that team. And then you stick him with Malik Willis, and then he's got to play with Levis. To me, I think sometimes we just look at the one loss record and say, okay, that's what it is.
So you would be, if you're evaluating the 8, you would be evaluating Kraft versus Spanos versus Bud Adams' family versus Tepper versus the Seattle ownership. Is that what you would be evaluating?
Right. I would be evaluating the commitment to what they're willing to spend. I mean, like, for example, nobody talks about this. The Patriots over the last 5 years have not ranked higher than 30th in spending. Last year, they ranked 31st. They've only spent $198.4 million last year, right? The Chargers spent $190, okay? They're the least amount of spending team. The team that spent the most money this year is Cleveland. The Jets are second. Can you imagine you're Woody Johnson and you spent $282.1 million on this team this year and you got this result and you're happy and you're bringing everybody back?
You think
explain that to me.
You think he's reevaluating Robert Saleh right now?
No, because I don't think he should be. Mm-hmm. He should be in Ann Arbor talking to Jim Harbaugh, saying, he should be, or because I don't think he can get Belichick. But even if he thought maybe he should be talking to somebody, when you spend this kind of money, the last 2 years, 22 to this year, the Jets were third in spending last year. They're first in spending this year. Second in spending, I'm sorry. To me, it's all about, okay, what are we spending here? How much money are we spending? You know, what are we doing? How are we handling it, right? I think to me, like the Rams this year, excuse me, it was the Rams, are they have only spent $190 million this year. Why? Because they got so much cap room taken away from them, they couldn't spend money.
Michael, now with Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick, at least in present time, no longer at their current teams, and we don't know where Bill Belichick is going to end up yet. Where it sits right now, your boy Sean McVay is tied for the fourth longest tenured head coach in a spot and is the youngest head coach in the National Football League. It's crazy to think about. So you see these guys, are we seeing a complete shift in the NFL though now where like these guys who we have known forever are moving on and we're shifting to just a younger style? And we talk about this being such a week to week league. It feels like the Vrabel firing is kind of a quick trigger type of a reaction to the last 2 years, even though he's so recently a coach of the year, top seed in the AFC. Like, are we moving away from things too quickly?
Well, we are.
I think Vrabel's really an aberration. I mean, there's some conflict there about control of that team. I mean, what did they want? Michael, you've said it better than I can say. What did they want with the roster they had there? Yeah. I think he's a tremendous coach, and I think he might even be a top choice over Belichick or Harbaugh, depending on what the team wants. Obviously, age is a factor. You would know better if Robert Kraft would want Vrabel back or he would target him. It's interesting because, Stormy, I have the same question about college football. I think, obviously, the change with the portal and NIL is one of the reasons Saban or Miss Terry probably made the decision, said it's time. They don't want to deal with this, right? It's a whole different era. And now are the coaches of that age that have coached for 30 years that are in their 60s going to be moving away? Would a Chris Peterson want to come back to this environment? Would an Urban Meyer want to come back? And I'm not saying Alabama's going to call Urban Meyer because I don't think they will, but they might call a Chris Peterson. Obviously, we hear Dan Lanning said, I'm good where I'm at. And, they got a lot of Nike money. They're going to be in the Big Ten. I think it's probably the right decision. Dan Lanning probably has a chance to reevaluate in 3 years when the next guy after Saban fails because the standards are just too high.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to walk into it. Want to walk in with after that. I don't think it's hard. And I think there's more to this story than Nick just decided one day he woke up, I'm done. I think there's way more to this.
Nobody could follow John Wooden at UCLA, right? I mean, I'm just trying to draw the comp, right? No, nobody could. Gene Bartow went 58-7. They ran him out of town.
You want to let somebody take this job. Okay, what's the over-under and amount of years that the next head coach is at Alabama? What would you set that at?
It's tough because I think Kirby's ahead of you right now with the Georgia program. I will say, it's tough because what's the contract going to be? 5 years? I mean, I would say 4.5 years.
I would say, like, my thought process is just that whoever the guy is that steps in isn't going to last long, and then it'll be the next guy.
I tell you, I'd call Lane if I was, and I know they're going to say, well, he comes with immaturity and baggage. Yeah. Sarkisian comes with more baggage than Lane to me.
Sure.
That's my. And, Lane's been dying for an opportunity to be in a place where he can recruit against teams like Alabama. I think you give him a shot.
But would Sark even want to leave Texas? He's got a pretty good situation there right now, you'd think.
Well, Texas is a better job. He gets more players at Texas. Alabama doesn't have as many high school kids as they do in Texas.
And they're losing commits already right now, which I know they say they're going to try to, at least they told the team that, hey, stay put for the next 72 hours. We're going to try to see if we can make an announcement in the near future. Do you think that's realistic to have somebody nailed down that fast?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. A lot more still to tackle here in our final segment on the Lombardi Line. Thankful to Mike Palm for hanging out with us. We will be right back on the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL postseason, is bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs that much more electric. New customers can bet $5 on any game and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VEGAS, that's V-E-G-A-S, only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code VEGAS. The crown is yours. Back here, wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, in studio with us. So normally around this time, we do a Palms Pressing 3. Yep.
Are you ready?
Are we ready?
Are you ready?
I'm
well,
always
you
ready.
Haven't tacitly approved the question, so I don't know if I can move forward.
Okay.
Move forward. I mean, I can come up with something right off the dome here, maybe, but let's talk NFL playoffs, Michael. How about that? I'll come up
great.
With this first question. I want to talk about the game Sunday afternoon at Jerry World. And from, in your thought, from an in-game betting perspective, how much pressure is on Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy in this game to the point, if they're trailing the Packers as we get well into the second quarter of that game, how tight can that team become knowing that their futures, maybe McCarthy's job from Jerry's comments, are all on the line? I mean, I think if they don't at least make an NFC championship game, then the highlight of this season will be Jimmy Johnson going into the Ring of Honor. How much pressure will there be on Dak and Mike McCarthy if they fall behind to the Packers?
Well, I think, look, the pressure will be all through the game, mm-hmm. on all, whether they're ahead or behind. Mm-hmm. I think that this is one of those moments where they listed as a 7.5-point favorite. There's certain tape they can put on, and they can say, man, this is not a good team. Look what Bryce Young did. We can play them well. But then when they turned the reel on last year, when they watch them play in Green Bay at Lambeau Field, where, you know, both teams gained over 400 yards. The game went to overtime. They know they're in for a fight. They know they're in for a fight. And I think Mike's got to play a certain style of this game, that he's going to have to play it so that he can control the pace of the game. Like, this is a game where I don't believe either team will gain full control. Some might be in the lead, some might not, one might not. But to me, this game is going to be in the fourth quarter. It's going to come down to who can convert those third and short yardage plays and which defense plays their best defense of the year. And so it lends yourself to believe Dallas can, because of all the kind of problems within the Packer defense with Joe Barry. But in defense of Joe Barry and Matt LaFleur, whenever they've played a team the second time, they seem to have a good feel for them. They played the Cowboys last year and had a great feel for them, not defensively, but offensively. So, yeah, all the pressure is on Mike, and all the pressure is on them to play well. And if they can't get control of the game, that pressure is going to really mount.
All right. Question. I just a quick follow-up on that. I think also next weekend, whoever Baltimore is playing, but especially if it's Cleveland, there has to be a lot of pressure on Lamar Jackson, who hasn't been able to perform in the playoffs. People have argued with me and say he's getting a second MVP. There's no pressure on him. I disagree.
I think there's a lot of pressure on the Baltimore franchise to play well, right? I mean, Tennessee went in there when they came off the bye, and we saw Derrick Henry run for over, and they knew that's all they had was Derrick Henry. And so there's a lot of pressure on this. There's pressure on you when you have the number one seed. It's the same thing in San Francisco if the Rams come back there to play them, right? We could have Baltimore, Cleveland, San Francisco, L.A. in the divisional round. And if we have that, there's pressure. You always feel like, are you going to be able to keep the momentum going? Can you keep it? I mean, when we played Baltimore in the divisional round in 14, that was nerve-wracking because you knew Baltimore was the best team. I'm sure Michigan probably felt like if we get past Alabama, we'll beat Washington. We felt like if we could get past Baltimore, we could get to the Super Bowl. And I think it's the same thing. San Francisco's going to feel like if we can get past the Rams, we're in good shape. If we can get past, you know, if Baltimore can get past Cleveland, we're in good shape. Those are the hardest games, and you kind of press, and the teams you favor in those situations are the teams that can execute on third and short to keep the ball. This is going to be a game you don't want to keep the ball to not score. You want to keep the ball to keep the other team from not scoring. And Dallas has done a good job of that this year.
All right, question two, Michael. A large part of your handicap and evaluation of these games is in the coordinator matchups. Of the six games on Wild Card Weekend, which team has the biggest advantage in the coordinator matchups?
Well, I think Kansas City does, because they played Vic. and they know what Vic will do. The problem is Vic can't do it as well as he did it before because he's run out of players. You go back and watch the Miami game against Buffalo. Buffalo scores 21 points. One of the touchdowns, the great catch in the end zone, you know, that there were linemen downfield on that play. That shouldn't have been a touchdown. That should have got called back. And so they gave up 14. They gave up 7 on that. They gave up. That play was a third down play. You know, they played as good as you can play, and Buffalo was able to come away with the win. I think this matchup with Miami is because of the injuries. And then when you look at the other ones, I think both teams, like Dallas, Green Bay, good one. Like, there's no real weak coordinator battle here that I can see. The only thing that I think becomes a problem is does Philly have an answer for what Todd Bowles is going to blitz them with? Because he's going to take a page out of Don Martindale's playbook and really go after the Eagles' offense.
I could be alone in this thought process, but I think the Eagles are broken, and I think the Bucs are going to win that game.
I can't handicap the game because I have no idea what the Eagles are right now.
No clue.
I don't know. All I know
is the Eagles are just plummeting. If they were a stock, they would be going every day. You'd be looking to say, "Oh my God, where are they?" They can't look. They can't. They're up 21-20-6 against Arizona, never in control of the game because they can't stop anybody on defense.
Yeah, we've taken sharp money on the Eagles, though. Yeah.
Well, I know. I mean, you know why like I think you're doing that, Mike? Yeah. You know why I think you're doing that? I think Baker's hurt.
Mm.
I think if you look at them the last 2 weeks, they haven't really played well offensively. And Baker doesn't. I think he's hurt.
That's what I was going to say, Michael. Like, I know the Bucs are no juggernaut, and we've got Baker dealing with the ankle and the ribs and all the things. But I don't know. There is nothing that Philadelphia has done over the last 5 weeks that makes me feel confident in wanting to place a bet on the Eagles. But that is interesting that you're getting that money taken in.
My last question, and you're a great historian of the game. You worked with Bill. I wanted to ask from a historical context. You've written two books, Gridiron Genius and Football Done Right. You know, there's been 14 coaches that have won multiple Super Bowls because there's like a lot of outrage that how could you fire Bill Belichick, right? And Kraft and this decision they came to. But, I mean, it's not just Belichick. We know about Jimmy and Jerry, right? Seaford was not extended after winning two Super Bowls in San Francisco. Shanahan was fired in Denver. I mean, he was fired. It was years later. But he was fired, and we all know Jerry bought the team and fired Tom Landry in Dallas. In the historical context of these dismissals, the dismissals of coaches with multiple Super Bowls, where does this rank in terms of justified or not justified, Bill being gone in New England?
Well, in this era with Twitter and Instagram and all that, I think it's probably was motivated more. I think when you win six, been to nine or how many they've been to, this is probably the most unfair. I would say Art Modell firing Paul Brown was probably the most unfair of all because of how great his team was. But that the reason he fired Modell fired Brown is the same reason why Shanahan got fired. It's the same reason why Seifert. It all comes back to the owner wanting to regain control of their team. And I think that's ultimately really the telltale sign here, that they didn't want to take away power from Bill, so they took away all the power from Bill. And they want their team back. Dan Reeves, Pat Bowlen wanted his team back from Mike Shanahan. You know, I think Amy Adams wanted her team back from the Titans, and they haven't won a Super Bowl. I think a lot of that comes into this, Mike, and it's unfair because Greg Popovich has, you know, been able to maintain his job in San Antonio, and they haven't won in a long time. But the ownership understands what it takes to rebuild. I think the NFL owners don't understand that.
Wherever Belichick goes, does he get the record? Does he pass Don Shula for most wins in NFL history?
Yeah, I think he's still at the top of his game. I think he still has great energy. I think he understands it. The game hasn't passed him by. Like, he's not looking for, you know, they say, well, he doesn't use analytics. Well, then you don't even know what he does. How do you know he doesn't use analytics? How do you even know that? You know, because he kicks field goals instead of taking points. Here's one for you, Mike. I like to know. At what point when these teams in the playoffs go for it on fourth down and turn down the points, do they ever put up next to the decision how many possessions are left in the game?
All I know is every decision is if it's fourth and six or less, they're supposed to go for it. It's inane. I don't know where they're coming up with that.
They never put up how many possessions are left. Whereas when you shoot a three over a two in the NBA, there's a zillion possessions left in that game. What do you care?
We talked just quickly in closing, Tim and I on primetime yesterday, talked to Rohan Davey, who got to play for both Saban and Belichick, his quarterback at LSU when he came in. And I asked him, what was the string that tied the two of them together? What was the characteristic? He says both of them had the greatest attention to detail of anybody that he ever dealt with in the game.
No, that's a perfect answer.
End of an era, the greatest of all time in college football, and the greatest that we've ever seen do it in the National Football League. Although Bill's not retiring.
I argue Bear Bryant has a case here.
All right.
Might not even be the best at Alabama.
Whoa.